Belonging to a group is one way we form our identity. There are two primary ways of defining a group of people. One way is to define them based on who they are. The other way is to define them based on what they do. The who they are way sets out boundaries for the group based on the characteristics of its members. They may be people who had enough money to join a particular country club. They may be people who live in a certain neighborhood, city, or nation. They may be people who believe particular things. They may be people of a certain age, race, gender, or sexual orientation. In part, this way of understanding a group comes from those who are excluded as much as those who are included. And much attention is often given to defending the boundary lines of exclusion. For example, the southern border of our nation. The other way of understanding a group is by what they do. They run marathons, they build houses, they teach children. This way of defining a group is not interested in the characteristics of those who are excluded. They are interested in doing what they deem important. In the story today, Peter has a vision, which sounds much loftier than if he said that he nodded off after lunch and had a dream. In the vision, Peter sees all these animals who are deemed unclean by Jewish dietary practices. A voice from off stage that Peter assumes is God's voice tells him to kill and eat. Modern people get a little squeamish here because usually someone else kills what we eat. But Peter isn't squeamish. He's offended. He is faithful to his religion and has never eaten unclean animals. But the voice says, what God has made clean, you must not call profane. This vision happens three times on a recurring loop before Peter is awakened by a small group of non-Jewish people who ask him to come with them, for they too have had a vision instructing them to go get Peter. Peter puts his vision together with the visit of these Gentiles and understands that the identity he had as a Jewish person has lost its line of exclusion. And so the community of those who followed the teaching and example of Jesus expands beyond its Jewish roots. Christians have been telling this story for centuries as a way of explaining how Christianity became a separate religion. In so doing, we have missed the point. This is a story that alerts us to the idea that our faith cannot be fettered by the common notions of religion. I grew up inside the Christian religion. I was taught that I had to believe that Jesus was the Son of God who died in payment for my sins if I wanted to be baptized and become a member of the church. In seminary, I learned about the various aspects of the Christian religion. In my systematics class, I had to write a very long paper about my understanding of the Trinity. In my conservative Baptist roots and my liberal seminary experience, I was led to believe that Christianity was all about what people had to believe to be part of the group. Now I see that all of that was a waste of time and energy. The followers of Christ are not defined by who they are. They are defined by what they do. We're called to do what Jesus did. He didn't create a congregation to go off someplace safe and become politically and theologically correct. He stood with the impoverished and oppressed, providing healing, hope, and bread. He challenged the core beliefs and practices of the world, which created and defended systemic exploitation and oppression. And while he did these things, a community of followers assisted and learned how they too could do that work. Those who base their efforts for justice in the nonviolent power of love are the community of Christ And it doesn't matter a mosquito fart whether or not you believe in a Trinitarian God. Our concern as followers of Christ is the work of compassion and justice. But somehow, the church started thinking that the work of the church was the church. For example, the title that Lauren and I use is pastor, which stems from the Latin word for shepherd. So defined, a pastor's job is to take care of the flock. And that's how most churches operate. The pastor takes care of the members. Worship is for members. The buildings are for the members. Sure, the members might do some nice things in the world with their spare time and money, but traditionally a pastor is measured by how much they take care of the flock. Instead, we need another title to underscore a very different calling. Perhaps instead of calling me Pastor Rich, I should be called Agitator Rich. Instead of Reverend Canon, Lauren might be Instigator Canon. For generations, we've acted as if the realm of God was inside our doors, and what we needed to do was perfect it and invite people in. This is backwards. The realm of God is a vision of justice and compassion that we carry beyond our doors to guide us in our efforts to reform the world. Certainly, we need to care for ourselves too, but if we are true to the example of Jesus, our identity must stream from what we are doing to reshape the world around us. While I was away, the Pacific Northwest Conference of the United Church of Christ met to vote on a budget. There was a heated debate centering on the need for racial diversity among the two people that currently make up our conference staff leadership. While it was important to hear the perspective of those who are a racial minority within our denomination, still the conversation was all about the identity that springs from who we are rather than what we do. What I didn't hear in that conversation was talk about the desperate needs of those who were not part of that conversation. The needs of people fleeing their homes because of poverty or violence or the impact of climate change. Those people were not represented in what we were talking about. And that's what I find so frustrating about working in the church. People dealing with oppression there think that by calling a pastor who is gay or a woman or a person of color and thinking deep thoughts about the issue, they've done something that's required. They've done all they can to address the harm of oppression. Though our thoughts and symbolic actions have some importance in the who we are way of understanding our group, such actions do not change or challenge the systemic justice that governs the world. Instead, what is needed is to utterly alter the purpose and practice of the church to, as effectively as possible, challenge oppression in the world beyond our doors. If our concern is for those most in need, it is less about who the conference minister or pastor is, and it's more about what the conference or church is doing in the world. It's not about who serves the needs of the flock. It's about how the flock organizes itself to oppose the wolves. It's easy to change the leadership of a church or a conference to represent some historically excluded group. It is much, much harder to change the very nature of the congregation or conference. Which brings us back to Peter's vision. Peter responded to his vision of radical inclusion by pushing the boundaries of Judaism beyond Judaism. This isn't a nice story about how Gentiles got included in the Jesus movement. It is a deeply disturbing story about the willingness to abandon long-held beliefs and practices in the name of a greater vision. What do we need? What do we need to change in ourselves, in our communities, to better serve those who suffer the most from oppression? Christianity is not about Christians. It's about all those who suffer, prioritizing those who suffer the most. And it's about opposing the forces in our world which systematically profit from the suffering of others. It's not about inviting people to join Keystone Church, but inviting people to join the justice and compassion-centered work that springs from Keystone. I'm thankful for the Green Team here at Keystone and for the Take Five efforts that we do. The question is, can we do more? For 17 years, the Meaningful Movies focused on justice education. It was led by a community group of which I was a part. Now that group is no longer able, it seems, to resurrect the movies from its COVID torpor. Are there enough of us at Keystone to host a monthly gathering for justice? Lots of people know little or nothing about the history and practice of nonviolence. Can we provide training and get people to attend? The Justice Leadership Program is helping people in other congregations and in our own to become justice leaders. Can we help expand the program? For 7 years, we hosted justice interns as part of the Justice Leadership Program. Now that the young adult component of that program is no longer operational, should we hire an intern to help us do more justice? Are there other, better ways that we as a congregation can enhance our calling? Hanging over today's worship is news that a young white man drove out of his way to go to an African American neighborhood in Buffalo, New York. And there he killed 10 people. His motivation was race-based fear and hate. If this is ever going to change, we have to stop thinking that the work of the church is all about us. As I look towards the time when I will cease to be your agitator, my prayer is that you'll call someone based on their ability, experience, and desire to do the work of compassion and justice. If they are a member of a historically excluded group, so much the better. This is our calling, to keep asking ourselves the hard questions of what we can do, how we can change, so that we can do the work we're called to do. That's how we continue to be good news. Amen.